Internet, I'm your husband host, Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife host, Teresa McElroy.
And you're listening to Schmanners.
It's Extraordinary Etiquette.
For ordinary occasions, hello, my dove.
Hello, dear.
How are you?
I'm well.
Well rested?
No.
No.
But now is the time of year here in Ohio.
Now is the season for pollen.
Yes, a false summer, basically, is what we have here. We hit about 80 degrees yesterday.
But we just have full spring.
I know.
And now we're having false summer?
Yep.
Oh, my
goodness. It'll get cooler again before actual summer. But this is the time, right before school gets out, in about a month or two.
We've got to do something about this climate, if you ask me.
Where people start to plan their summer vacay.
Oh, man. It all runs together for me.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I don't know if you know this.
Mm.
Outside of being a student, and I don't even know teachers. I'm sure they do stuff during the summer. I don't think teachers get, 3 months off. I think that there's this programming that happens when you are basically like 4 to 22, if you go to college or beyond or whatever, where you're like, well, the way life works is there's 9 months of doing hard work. And then you get 3 months of just like whatever you want to do. I can't wait till I'm a grown up with money. I'm going to spend that 3 months just like, I don't know, partying or whatever. And then what you find out is when you're a grown up, that doesn't happen because most jobs you work
every day.
And especially
if you're lucky, you get vacation time.
Even especially if you have kids. And then you think, oh, my kids will be home. But then you can't. There's camps. The kids want to do stuff.
I know, right?
Oh, boy.
If you were in pre-railroad Europe, you would have to do something. I mean, if you were rich, obviously.
Okay.
They call it the Grand Tour.
Okay. This is interesting. Because when you told me we'd be talking about grand tours, it does conjure a certain image, right, of what you were describing, of a certain privilege subset of a thing. But there's also a part of me that thinks of it in terms of, like, touring, like going on, live shows and concerts and stuff like that. I know that's not it, but it feels like a... I don't know. I don't know what it is. I think, like, I conjure the image, but I don't know what goes into it.
I'll tell you about it.
Oh, thank goodness. That's how the that's how the show works. Yeah, that's how the show works, right.
From the 17th through the 19th centuries, it was tradition.
So 1600s to 1800s.
Yes. For the upper crust British men who had come of age, which was usually about 21, to travel across Europe.
Oh, like they'd backpack across Europe?
No.
Oh.
No, and it wasn't actually Europe. It was a couple, it was like the same two countries.
Oh, okay.
So it was meant originally to showcase the best of what European culture had to offer.
Uh-huh.
So that they could return to London as well-rounded gentlemen of the world.
Uh-huh.
Even though this year to 4 year excursion.
4 years?
I know, depending upon how rich you are and how fast you go.
4 years? Oh, Boise.
If you don't go very fast, you could last a long time.
Okay.
Would,
just imagine if someone's like, hey, could you take me on a tour of this museum? I'm like, yeah, of course. Do you have a couple hours? No. Sorry. I need it to be a 4 year tour. What?
Usually,
I live here now, like in the mixed up files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankenweiler.
It would be chasing women and complaining about wine that wasn't from their family's estate.
Oh, okay. Or chasing wine and complaining about women.
Mm, certainly.
That feels like that's most of Ernest Hemingway's books.
Yes, it does.
Hey, listen, I'm going to throw the gauntlet down. give me Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil and Frankenweiler over anything written by Ernest Hemingway ever.
So the idea was through this excursion, you would be educated firsthand on classical antiquities and the Renaissance, right?
Okay, so this is why, because this comes up a lot. I like to listen to a lot of period, like, murder mysteries, and this happens a lot where they talk about, like, you know, young men going places to learn about these things, as you've described. Okay,
yeah.
This is why it's familiar.
Right, and so this was before the comforts of modern-day travel, right? So pre-railroad, which meant it had to be by boat, on foot, by horse and carriage.
Or jetpack.
No, no jetpacks. Okay. And because it was so difficult to get around, that's probably why they only went to two countries.
Okay.
So you would start in England. You would get a carriage to Dover, where you would get on a boat.
Mm.
And you would go to France.
That was going to be my guess, yes.
Mm-hmm. Learning French customs and dances and general French things, because those were always in vogue, even though Britain was intermittently at war.
Doesn't matter.
Anyway.
And no matter when, people have had beef with France and with England, I mean, but still, it's always been couture.
After Paris, of course, you would go down the countryside to Lyon, and then you would continue south to Italy.
See, that was going to be, yes. Yep. That feels right. Yes. Yep.
There you would hit Venice and Florence, and then the ultimate destination was Rome. Right. So yeah. You could go to like Pompeii or Herculium or whatever it was, and then you would go home.
Well, at this point, you got to remember, people at home, there wasn't TV shows to talk about. So people needed stuff to talk about at parties. So they would go to Rome and then talk about, like, I saw this vase. And that was like, that could get them through a couple years of small talk.
Or the British at this time were really good at taking those things back home with them.
Yeah. A thing that they've continued to be pretty good at. And, well, I would say at this point they've mastered the skill of keeping those
things.
Yes,
finders keepers is the ultimate.
Well, stealers keepers, because sometimes those things weren't lost. They were there. People looked at them and they said, I like looking at this, but who can stand traveling back and forth? I know. I'll take this back with me. And jumping back to our Leave No Trace episode, I would say don't take souvenirs.
Depending on how intense your travel schedule was, and of course how fabulously wealthy you were, some people did modify that itinerary, but most didn't. So it would be kind of like a bunch of like college-aged, pompous British lads going to France, which, like I said, everyone hated, and then going to Italy.
Well, they hated France, but they also loved France.
But they also loved France.
Yes.
And then going to Italy, where people got drunk and chased women, right? And these, let's say frat bros.
Yeah, let's say it.
It is so entertaining to think that they colonized half the planet and yet really could only make it to the two countries closest to them.
Now, hold on. You say frat boys, but some of them were probably also pompous would-be poets.
Okay.
Some of them were probably...
Yes. Lord Byron did make
this
a
This is
tour.
What I'm saying. They weren't all junks. Some of them were sad boys with a Z, where they would be like, hey, look, I feel things. But also, I would like the best of everything, and my daddy's paying for it.
By the mid-1700s, this grand tour had become such a regular feature of aristocratic education that it was looked upon as a educational rite of passage, close quote.
Uh-huh.
You know, not only for the Brits, but also for other wealthy people of Central Europe, right? And it was one of the reasons that—
I mean, not women. It was boys, right?
Oh, no.
Boys only.
No, not women. Boys only.
Boys only. This one's for the boys. I think it's just nice during that time period that finally something was just for the men.
Finally.
You know what I mean? Finally, just for the men, this one.
And because it was so well established that everyone did this, this is where you often made a lot of your connections, right? Where you met the Habsburgs or whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Or the Habs-Notsburgs.
Meh.
Okay. But this is... Because you do get a lot of, like... Once again, in, like, period books, right, where, like, the book starts with the person being, like, 25, right?
Yeah.
And they've just returned home, time to make a person of themselves, right?
Exactly.
Or there's a lot of, like, I shared a carriage with this person, and that's how I know them, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that.
Definitely, definitely. So with the rise of industrialization in the 19th century, The Gilded Age of American nouveau riche wanted to join this party.
That's a much bigger trek, though. I mean, definitely. I saw a TikTok recently. Yesterday. And it doesn't matter. No one's testing me. They're not going to check. That was about, like, it was a British dude who was like, hey, I just got back from, like, a two-month vacation or, you know, trip to America. Everybody needs to back off the Americans for not being well-traveled. Do you know how long it takes to get from just one state to the other?
Very, very true. But these nouveau riche, right, this is how, again, they would make connections, they would gain exposure, and this supposed, like, sophistication that they gained from going to Europe wasn't just to better themselves, but it was to make them look better in American society as well, yeah. Because things like, he's spending some time in France, right, makes you seem more legit.
Yeah. Also, if we're going to be brutally honest, I can't imagine they were, let's put it politely, well-behaved.
Mm.
And so if your 22-year-old son is going to get in trouble, is going to maybe sow his wild oats, as one might say, better to do it over there.
Maybe.
Where people aren't going to gossip about it back here as much.
Oh.
Whereas if he's doing that in town, everyone's going to know and it's going to be hard to marry him off.
That's a good thought.
If you let him do that over in France and then come back and you're like, yes, he was over there studying antiquities and paintings. And they're like, okay.
Sure he was.
Okay.
Like you. There were people who were incredulous about this this so-called grand tour of two other countries.
I mean, you say that. There's probably people listening to us right now who are like, I don't know, man. I haven't been to other countries.
Well, but that's the thing. Why is it called a grand tour? Two places doesn't really, like, evoke grand to me.
This I will give you because as someone who goes on tour myself, the idea of saying, like, for example, coming up, I think in May, of saying, like, yes, it's an international tour. We're going to Vancouver. And we're going, it's like, okay, hold on. Technically, yes. But no, it's Tacoma, Washington and Vancouver. And it's like, yeah, our internet, that's all over the globe.
People cited that because it was such an established route, that it lacked adventure and made it, frankly, pretty boring. Which
seems like school.
Yeah.
If you're talking about educational, yeah.
Writer Jean Galhard also observed that while the experience was supposed to be about cultural expansion, usually wound up enforcing the stereotypes that the travelers already carried with them, such as the French are courteous.
At the time, that was...
Well, because of all of the etiquette, how you had to have the certain type of bow and the certain type
of... Okay, that's just not the that's not the stereotype.
No, not that they're kind and welcoming.
Oh,
they have...
That's an overly polite society.
Yes.
Okay.
The Spanish are lordly, the Italians are amorous, the Germans are clownish, right? That was kind of like what they thought about other countries at the time. And
Americans, so peaceful.
Right, yes. No.
Quiet, easygoing, just happy to be there.
People started to really think critically of this touring because instead of like a cultural exchange, it turned into the aristocracy kind of leering at the differences between people. And so, you know, it's so funny that people would say that Italy, like the south of Italy was beautiful and, you know, the countryside amazing. But then they would say that in the same breath that the people there were backward and allergic to progress, filled with loud, quote, unruly men and loose, passionate women.
Okay.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, right. I also have to imagine that if it was me, right, and like my older brother was about to go off or something, I'd be like, hey, hold on. We're about to fund this fool's vacation for 4 years. You don't think we could maybe spend that money on something better? I'm saying, listen, guys, we're all super rich. We get that. But you don't think maybe we could spend this on something more important or hook him up with, I don't know, government position or whatever with that money?
I don't know, man. Again, another critique of this is that what if the grand tour ungentlemaned their good sweet boys?
Okay.
It was completely accepted at this time that people were nervous to send their sons on tours because what if they became too European?
Oh, no.
What if they returned barefoot and long-haired, having forgotten all of their hard-learned manners?
Or bare-haired and long-footed.
What if they love France too much?
Oh, man.
What would happen to these sweet British boys and their good, sweet British stuffiness?
And then you have to come home and they're doing affected accents. Oh, can you imagine? Smoking their long, weird cigarettes, I imagine. I don't know.
It did, at the time of the Industrial Revolution, fall out of fashion. Partly because once capitalism entered the chat, there was less time to appreciate art, and the boys of the aristocracy would have more things to do than just going around Europe, like you said.
And also, let's be honest, once you get into like railroads and stuff and Industrial Revolution, it becomes more accessible
for
more people. Yeah, then it's less bragging rights to be like, I'm so rich, I sent my son on this. And be like, yeah, so did I. Like, oh, man.
Once everyone's doing it, it's not so exclusive.
Yeah. Then it just stops being called Grand Tour and just called Vacation.
Yep. Because what if your good boys were surrounded by ooey gooey pores? Ooh.
Sorry, what? Oh, poor people, not P-O-R-E-S. Because ooey gooey pores was so gross to me for a second.
Sorry.
Oh, you know what? In fact, I need to clear it. Okay. How about a word from another Max Fun show?
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Okay. So anyways, the pores are there. What else?
Yes. So here are some real tales of real life boys being real life little babies, basically. We got a lot of this specific silliness from Mary McGillivray on YouTube. Very fun. Check it out. She actually followed the old-fashioned route of the Grand Tour herself and gives historical information on each place she visits and how you would have interacted with it if you were a very ungrateful 22-year-old Chad.
Sounds right.
In the 1700s. So, remember, we mentioned that from the beginning, you had to travel from London, which was considered the center of the universe, right, to Dover to catch a boat. And this was the first leg of the journey.
Right.
Already people complained.
Well, I was going to bet people complained the whole way.
Oh, of course. But they started they left.
I've been on 45-minute long plane trips where people have complained.
In 1766, an author named Tobias Smollett said that along the road to Dover, quote, the accommodation was cold and comfortless, the beds paltry, the cooking exacerbable, the wine poisoned, the attendants bad.
Wine was poisoned?
The publicans insolent, and the bills extortion.
Okay.
He goes on.
Sounds real fun at parties this day.
I know, right? He goes on to say, there is not a drop of tolerable malt liquor to be had from London to Dover.
Okay.
I know.
Then go home.
He was actually known as such a grumpy traveler that his fellow grand tourist named Lawrence Stern satirized him in his own writings.
Ooh.
Stern created a character called Smell Fungus, who nothing but complain about his travels abroad.
Oh, boy. Okay. Got him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Burn him to the ground. Go on.
And Smell Fungus, incidentally, became so widely popularized as a term for grumpy travelers that you could call other people a Smell Fungus.
Why'd we stop? Bring that back.
I don't know.
Man, listen, I know you don't like waiting in lines at Disney World, but stop being such a Smell Fungus.
Yeah.
Boom. Roasted.
We already talked about the love-hate relationship between France and Britain, right? But Paris was actually the most popular tourist destination for Brits. to hate. Popular to go. Oh, yeah. Also really popular to hate
it's
it.
It's a frenemies kind of thing, right?
In 1765, Horace Walpole wrote of Paris, quote, "It is the ugliest, beastliest town in the universe."
In the universe? You don't know all the planets. They might have grosser cities.
Okay, in their defense, Paris didn't look like it does now.
Then why were they going?
I know.
One of two things is true. Either it was a cesspool, and they were all voluntarily going there and spending a lot of money to get there. Or it ruled, and they all complained about it to seem cool. It's one of those two things.
But it is also well established that at the time, like a lot of big cities, they didn't have a sewage system.
Well, I bet London was rough too, guys.
Indeed, indeed. Not only that, but the religious differences did have a hand in this.
Sure.
England was mostly Protestant, but both France and Italy had deep Catholic traditions. And so going to these places to kind of sneer at people also had a little bit of a religious kind of flavor to it,
well,
right?
And there's some xenophobia in there, I'm sure. So there's a lot more language sharing nowadays where it's just like, especially in the modern internet age, where you just have to understand, like, if I'm going to be doing business with multiple people from multiple countries, right, there's some language exchange that has to happen. At this point, though, there was probably a lot more of, like, language barrier stuff. And if you're sitting there and you're a proper Englishman.
Maybe some of the, like, the best educated people were educated in French.
Yes, but what I'm saying
and
is
Italian.
There's no way their accents were good.
Okay.
They might understand it, right?
You or
they
pick them out.
They might be able to converse to, like, find a bathroom and find a restaurant or whatever. But the idea of, like, somebody correcting them, somebody laughing at a bad accent, somebody not understanding them, or them not understanding somebody else, and all of that becoming, oh, they're beasts over there.
Exactly. It was a great opportunity to prove to yourself that you were the best person.
Right.
Right. They did spend a lot of money, though.
Oh, sure.
One of the traditions of this grand tour was the second you got to Paris was to go to a Parisian tailor and immediately order a brand new custom wardrobe.
Now, here's what I'll say. That's obviously bad. But there's been a part of my life, and listen, I recognize how wasteful and extravagant and whatever this is. That's why I wouldn't do it. But I've always said my ideal perfect world travel, I walk onto an airplane with like AirPods and my phone and the clothes on me, right, and my wallet, whatever. Then I land where I'm going. I buy the clothes I need once I'm there. I wear them. And then at the end of the trip, I donate them somewhere. I walk back onto the plane. It's just me. I carry nothing. That's the dream. And so hearing that, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it for obvious reasons.
While your wardrobe was being done, they would hang in Paris learning dancing and fencing and horseback riding and things like that. And then from Paris, you would travel down to the Swiss Alps in order to make it to Italy. I mean, which was the ultimate destination, even if you were Protestant because of Rome.
Sure.
Right?
A lot of old stuff there, I've heard.
Here's the problem with traversing the Swiss Alps at the time.
It was cold. They didn't have ski lifts yet.
Yes, but also it was practically overrun with wolves.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that, okay. I was going to say there was no hot chocolate or St. Bernard's with like whiskey around the neck. But what you're saying makes a lot more sense. Wolves? Oh, no.
In the 17th and 18th century, it's believed that as many as 9,000 people died in wolf attacks.
Okay, now here's what I'm saying. You know how many times people would have had to die of wolf attacks before I was like, I don't think I'm going to do that? One.
Yep.
One. How many in a row before you were like, I think I'll be fine? That's wild to me. Can I also say, I know wolves get a bad rap. It makes me very upset. They're often portrayed in movies and
TV shows. We talk to our kids about this all the time, right? Because oftentimes, like, the wolves represent some kind of, like, outside antagonistic force that you
can't.
It's
danger. Be careful. Yeah. But I say, if 9,000 people die from wolf attacks, perhaps that is nature's way of saying this area is for the wolves.
That's right.
This is not your area.
That's not for you.
The wolf shouldn't come into your house. And you, should not go where the wolves live, which is what's happening right now. If a wolf got into Buckingham Palace, you're allowed to kill that wolf. You go into the woods where the wolf lives, those wolves are allowed to kill you. That's what I've decided is the new rule that should exist.
Even wolves got to eat, you know?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. There was a very well-established...
Don't kill a wolf that goes in Buckingham Palace, by the way. I think it would be absolutely the coolest thing. If I found out today, if I finish recording and I get on whatever news site I actually trust these days, and then we're like, yeah, there's a wolf that got into Buckingham Palace like months ago. They just leave the thing alone. They leave food out for whatever. They have a perfectly pleasant relationship with this wolf. They're not trying to domesticate it or whatever. It doesn't attack them. My respect levels would bump up just a little bit for the royal family.
Okay. There was a well-respected way, way around the Swiss Alps to get to where you were going. But people didn't take it because it was considered to be unmasculine.
You know what's really unmasculine? Getting at by wolves.
I know.
Who's like, yeah, man, he dying. Got at by wolves. What a man. That's a man's man right there.
The only way to get across the Alps, because they had like icy peaks and wolves and stuff, was on foot. And it was supposed to prove your masculinity if you were able to do it. Except these rich boys didn't want to walk. They would hire a carry man. What do you think a carry man is?
He would carry you.
Yeah. Aristocrats would pay men to literally strap them into a chair fitted with long poles and carry them across the mountains, like a palanquin, right? But just a chair instead of like a little shed.
Now, once again, when I'm talking about my personal dreams, ever since I have kids and I have to carry them around places, I have said what I need, my 3 foot tall child, I'm carrying at 6 feet tall. So what if there was then a 12 foot tall man who, like, weighed, you know, he was 5 times stronger than me or whatever, how much stronger I am than my kids. And then he carried me around.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't sound like these were 12-foot tall men that were carrying them around.
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah. Isn't it so... I mean, it really just boggles the mind to me that this is supposed to, like, you're taking this dangerous route to prove your masculinity. But what you actually do is you hire people to carry you.
Like a baby.
Like a baby.
Now, I would also argue, once again, man, I wish I'd been alive during this time. Not for all that stuff. But so I could say to someone, what is being stupid make you more masculine? Why wouldn't you say, like, that we're trying to educate these Jews, right, and send them out to learn this stuff? So the most masculine thing you can do is problem solve?
I guess.
Is figure out a better way. How is that not? Why are you apprising stupidity, blind, reckless stupidity over, like, oh, they figured out a better way? Like, that seems so blatantly obvious to me that it's not even like, oh, shouldn't they feel their feelings? Shouldn't they be more sensitive? It's more of like, yeah, but they figured out a better way, and that's better than just, like, blindlessly charging ahead. It's so wild to me.
Yeah. I think that we need to continue this as we explore Italy. If we make it through France and the Swiss Alps and you go on to Italy, there are several other stops and things that I want to talk about as far as that experience goes.
There was Tiger City and then Scorpionburg. You had to go straight through them.
And we'll talk about that next week.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize we had multiple stops. Okay. It's a grand tour of grand tours.
Yeah, we're
I
doing
love
a,
this.
A two-parter.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I thought that was clear.
No.
Sorry.
I thought you were trying to go to a second break. I was so thrown off. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to be back with another half of this episode next week. But a couple things. Like I said, we've got the Chicago shows coming up. Those are next week, too. So make sure you check those out. The My Brother and Me is sold out, but there are still some tickets for the Adventure Zone. So go to McElroy.family, I believe, or bit.ly/McElroyTours, and you'll find all the information there. We want to say thank you to our researcher, Alex, without whom we could not make this show. Thank you to our editor, Rachel, without whom we could not make this show. And thank you to you for listening. Why would we make the show without you? What else, Teresa?
We always thank Brent Brentofloss Black for writing our theme music, which is available as a ringtone where those are found. Also, thank you to Bruja Betty Pinup Photography for the cover picture of our fan-run Facebook group, Schmanners Fanners. If you love to give and get excellent advice from other fans, go ahead and join that group today. Hey, tell your friends about us. They would love to hear this show because you love this show, and we need you to tell them about it. And we also need you to submit your suggestions, your questions, your queries, your idioms. Send all of those to schmannerscast@gmail.com and say hi to Alex because she reads everyone.
And that's going to do it for us, so join us again next week.
No RSVP required.
You've been listening to Schmanners.
Manners, Schmanners. Get it.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.